Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy. We're going to have a little news show for you, and we're just going to have a little bit of a pickup, a roundup of some of the things we missed in the Sochi Grand Prix. We're going to talk about some of the drivers we didn't get a chance to focus on. We are going to talk about some driver news as well, some future track news that's come through, the odd little news story that's come up, but also we are going to talk about Mercedes mishaps and miscues. What we're going to do is we're going to do a league of justice for the number 44 car. Not for the driver, not for the team, but for the 44 car. I'm not going to do it alone. I'm also joined by Matt Trumpets. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Spanners.
Do you get Matthewed a lot?
Occasionally. Not that often, really.
When you're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, it is New York, so people come up with lots of other lively nicknames for me.
Do you get, you go home and you get Matthewed because, oh, you didn't insult enough people today. We're going to lose our Brooklyn residency card.
Yes, I was not ironic enough. Usually that's the problem.
So if anyone's in any doubt, Matt is actually literally all the way over in Brooklyn, New York, which is, I find it interesting because to me, you sound like you're off of the TV. So I always, whatever you say carries an extra authority. And that's why I have you on.
I love that. And I love that so many people are delighted with my artisanal vocal stylings as well.
Well, there was a tweet that you shared earlier. Was this a comment from YouTube, Matt?
I think it might have been from one of our Apple reviews. I don't know. It came to me in an email and I was just amused enough by it that I thought I'd share it with my friends.
So do you know who commented this? Was it just a random one? But the comment is,
I don't remember.
Comment is, the shows are good. Trumpets clearly spends time preparing good content, but he tends to speak at times with this odd over-enunciation. I adjust my speed to 1.5 to normalize his delivery. Someone needs to tell him. And then you've cut off the rest of it conveniently. But yeah, you always have a calm, rational cadence. I see that as a feature, not a bug.
Yeah, well, I tend to think of it that way, too. But, you know, you're never going to make everybody happy. And I'm just delighted he's figured, or she, or they, and there we go, that's the correct pronoun, they've figured out a way to listen to me without losing their ever-loving mind.
Yeah, and I did notice that when we first started doing this podcast. But it's always thoughtful. And the fact is, as well, there's like a delay between the two of us. So there's always a little bit of a gap. You single-handedly were the reason, though, why I went out and found automated systems to remove gaps. So because of you, we have that advance in our technology, but it's fine. Anything over 0.8 seconds just gets automatically cut down for the podcast version.
Yes, and that's yet another reason why I just do not worry about it too much.
We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. Welcome back to the shed, Chris Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, Spanners. It's been so long.
Yeah, I don't like your new career in PR where you have to work on race weekends. You need to prioritize the shed. You need to go back to whatever rubbish job that you hated before just so that I can have you on here more.
Pay me for it and then we'll be good to go.
Patreon.com/MissedApex. If we get 1 billion patrons, we will pay Chris a small amount of money, a retainer. But I hope you're well. And what I've always missed about you, Chris, is your journalistic capabilities. And since you've been in PR, what we've missed from you is that journalistic input. But you wrote a column for our site, Chris's column. Is that going to be a regular feature?
I hope so. It kind of came to me just because I've got 2 weeks off work at the minute. And so I'm trying to fill some time. But yeah, hopefully, you know, it's something just a bit low profile or low pressure, because I miss, you know, writing about this sort of stuff. So go check it out.
Yeah, all right. And we're also joined by Jules Segers, all the way from the Netherlands. Hello, Jules.
Hi, Spanners. Good evening.
You are also a journalisty man.
Yeah, true. Correct. Yeah.
Not currently F1. Can we not tempt you to come and blog and do the odd writing for us?
Sure. Definitely. I'm well up for it. Yeah.
And what is your current field of journalism?
I'm lecturing at the Journalism Academy over here. So breeding a new generation of Formula One reporters.
Ah, I see. So so when you're taking those lessons, is it all just like, this is Max Verstappen, he is very good, and then pictures of all the other drivers, they are all bad?
Yeah, they're all dressed up like Darth Vader. And of course, being a proper journalist and trying to provide quality, I try to teach them to be balanced and see the story from different angles. And
not like the biased British F1 media. Am I right, guys? Am I right? Well, we hear so many comments like that, so many comments at the moment about the biased British media, and there may well be some bias. I just want to make you guys a promise, because I know a lot of you accuse me of having biases, and you're absolutely correct. And by the way, I never know whether you're meant to say biases or biased, so I'm going to get them all wrong. You are absolutely correct. I do have them. Everybody does. I try to be honest with you about them. But Alex Van Gien did a wonderful post on his Twitter, where at Alex Van Gien, where he highlighted some YouTube comments that we had. One said, "I'm fed up with this podcast. You're always putting down Lewis Hamilton. I've never heard a winning driver be so slated. You're dismantling his achievement." And then another one saying, "You guys, you're so awful. All you do is kiss Lewis Hamilton's ass." And you go, "Yeah, okay." So I just want you guys to be sure, if you're accusing us of bias, are you sure that you're not just being triggered by the bad thing we say and not quite catching the good thing or the bad thing about the other driver? But the second thing is, I promise you, it is not our intention to poke, to needle, to flame. I never go out of my way to either be overly balanced or to just like ring the bell for Lewis Hamilton fandom. If it seems like that, I do apologise, but I promise you the intent isn't there. Let's explore some news.
Big Dirty News.
Chris, let's start off with some driver news. There is actually, there's a somewhat of a confirmation of what Joe was talking about, Joe Sayward on the show, when he said that he thought Albon was going to get signed for 2021, but he felt like Latifi was only there perhaps because he was paying and that his contract would run till the end of 2022. And it was actually Piastri that he had earmarked, thinking that will be your Williams 2023 driver. And there's reports coming out that seem to confirm that.
Well, yeah, I mean, in defense of Latifi, he has been a solid driver. Yes, he comes with a lot of financial backing, but Williams seem to like him a lot. Of course, there is also the added benefit that Alex and Nicky were teammates together at Dams in Formula 2 in 2018, and that was a very good partnership, and one of the reasons that Jos Capito cited as a reason for signing Alex for next season. But to come to Oscar Piastri, and I would throw Teo Porcher into the mix as well, two astonishing rookie F2 drivers this season who have come in and just set the scene ablaze. They are so incredibly talented, both coming in from F3 the previous season. Piastri won F3 in his rookie title, and is doing an incredible, if I remember rightly, leading the F2 standings as well in his rookie season. Porcher is a little bit younger, but still like right on the heels of the very quick guys at a much younger age, which is incredibly impressive. The fact that they will not be on the F1 grid next season is incredibly upsetting to me. And it just, it makes me think of, I wish we had back marker teams like Caterham, Mauritius and HRT again, just so that we could find these drivers a space on the F1 grid, because you don't get drivers like Daniel Ricciardo anymore who come in an HRT and then build their way up to the front of the grid.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a few things there I want to unpick. Had totally forgotten that that is where Daniel Ricciardo started. He was in HRT. How did he do? How was he? Who was his teammate, do you remember? And how was he able to shine at the back of the grid?
Probably Narain Karthikeyan, if I remember.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I honestly, it would have been someone kind of not fantastic because HRT couldn't afford people. And, you know, he was placed there by Red Bull. And he only did half a season as well. So, you know, you can only beat the teams around you. So I guess coming like 18th would have been like a victory for them.
Yeah, and I know that you're talking about wanting to have backmarker teams, but it seems to be pretty clear that we're in an era where 10 teams is what we're going to have. And we saw this actually earlier in a similar fashion, Callum Ilott gallivanting off to do TTM and IndyCar testing and letting our friend Robert Kubica, who miraculously is now ahead, or at least was ahead of Mazepin in the Drivers' Championship, get in one or two last thrill rides in an F1 car.
Well, it all depends on what Liberty want. And it seems like at the moment, Jules, that Liberty Media are kind of on this very American sports franchise path. So every race has to be a Super Bowl. Every race has to be this event. You can't have a French 2019 Grand Prix because that's boring and you need every race to be a Super Bowl. But also it's very much this franchise football idea. You know, there's a certain amount of places you're never going to be promoted, you're never going to be relegated, and this rule where people have to pay is something daft, isn't it? It's not 200 million, is it, to enter a new F1 team? I think it's something, there's an entry fee now to start a new team. So what's your take, Jules?
I come from an era, I just saw it in the Slack group, when you had teams like Forti or Andrea Moda and stuff like that. And when you had pre-qualifying on Friday morning at 9:30. So I'm all for it. I know it's never going to happen. I know there are good reasons not to have those teams. But as Chris points out, as a way for more young drivers to make it to the grid, to show what they can do, I think this season shows it, I won't say it's necessary, but it would be really good because it feels a bit clogged up right now. We had three Formula 2 drivers entering the scene this season, Tsunoda, Mazepin, and or Mazepin, as it's apparently pronounced in Russian, and Schumacher. And, we're not blown away by any of them. And I think it, on one hand, scares off teams to pull those guys who are now in F2, pull them in. And on the other hand, there's not really space for them. And I think maybe teams had been a bit trigger happy after a generation of Russell, Norris, etc. And now maybe a bit more cautious to do that.
Well, of course, just 2 years prior, we had Albon, Norris and Russell, the top three from the 2018 F2 title, all coming in 2019 and kind of just set the world alight, really. But I think the issue that Formula 2 in general has had this year has been the lack of races that it's been on the Grand Prix support bill. We know F2 and F3 this season, they're not racing, you know, together. It was part of a cost-saving measure to give them more races on one weekend. And so the idea was they travel to less races. It actually doesn't work out that way, which is why they're going back to the old format for next season. But the problem is you get teams like Sauber, who Porcher is a Sauber junior. or they want to see how Guan Yu Zhou is doing. But he's right now the favorite among the F2 field to actually get promoted to F1. They can't see on a regular basis how he's performing. There's big two. We just had a 2 month gap before Monza, where we had then had Monza and Sochi back to back weekends, and now we have a 10 week gap until the next race in Jeddah, and it's just such a huge gap to see how they are performing. And for Joe as well, you know, he did not have a good Sochi, so now he's got to wait such a long time to give them another reason. No, you should put me in your car for next season.
Yeah, if only the teams had resources and ways to evaluate drivers in between races, if that's what they really wanted to do.
Just right. It's all well and good putting them in the simulator, but you need to see how they do in racing scenarios. There's no better test, really.
Jules?
So, Matt, I think Matt tries to say, how serious are those F1 teams with their academies or their willingness to have a really good look at these drivers? And I often feel like the Formula One teams' academies are almost there to prevent talents from going to other F1 teams than really trying to breed them, let them grow, and actually offer them a seat in their team.
And of course, Matt, sometimes, you know, people can pay to be for that title, pay to be a Ferrari Academy driver. You've had some driver names that pop up there and you go, yeah, that wasn't Ferrari scouts picking you up. That was a bit of cash.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of record producers. Whenever a single artist has a hit, they will go find anyone that sounds vaguely like that and sign them just so that there's no competition.
Or if you happen to be the son of a very famous racing driver who raced for a very famous team, you might suddenly end up with their badge on your car. No one in particular springs to mind with that one. Nobody who went off and did Super Formula this season.
Allegedly. Sorry, just instinct. Is that?
Yeah, allegedly.
I think that covers off. Summers is in our Patreon live chat room, and he's just correcting you that Ricardo replaced Naren Karthikeyan, and he partnered Antonio Liuzzi.
So Vit Antonio Liuzzi, which is actually a decent benchmark. He was pretty seasoned at that point. Done, what, 4 or 5 seasons was, you know, a good benchmark to put a rookie against. I like the idea of, you know, having those back markers.
No, I do.
It's also something additional to look at.
I miss them. I miss them, Matt, as well. And I don't know. Our back of the grid battles, they are less interesting. I followed those battles. If they thought they weren't interesting to people, well, they had one person looking out and wishing them well and hoping they can go for that, you know, that glorious dream point or see which drivers really should be there. Even if it's a bit pro-am, you know, even if it's a little bit like Aston Martin now, you know, you've got a funding driver and then the pro. That's got its place as well, Chris, isn't it? That's got its place too.
That is how you run a race team. Maybe not in Formula One, but in junior categories, in GTs, a lot of Le Mans teams, you have an AM in the car to pay for the pro, basically.
Matt?
Yeah, well, this brings up sort of an interesting thing because we had a former Formula Euro type guy, Alex Palou, just win the IndyCar championship. And he was well on that ladder. He had some success. He finished third, in fact, in Super Formula before he signed for IndyCar. And so you got to ask yourself, you know, the question, why are these drivers going to want to stick around Formula One when they can go and be competitive and win championships and have a much better chance at it if they bail for other series?
Yeah, I've just had a little look at the championship table of F2, Chris. No, you get in first and then I'll...
Well, so we've been here with Alex Albon, haven't we? If you remember, I wrote quite a divisive feature about Alex Albon, arguing why he should stick to Formula E rather than risk the Formula One seat with Toro Rosso.
Yeah, I yelled at you.
Yeah, but I felt like I made a, you know, decent argument for it. And of course, you know, ultimately he was right to take the risk. It could have backfired massively, but it's paid off. He's had a hiatus, but coming back, and I think his career is better off for it. So I can't now sit here and say Piastri should go and do IndyCar or something rather than maybe wait a season, do an Ocon and come back with an F1 team.
Yeah, and what you're referencing is they hoist on their own petard. If you win that F2 championship, you may not participate next season. So if there are no seats, you have to go do another thing. But fortunately, I think for our friend Oscar, it looks like Liberty have taken this under advisement, because what they're talking about now is opening up a number of Friday sessions and requiring young drivers to be running them by all the teams. And as an added bonus for you, Spanners, that means there's no way there's a sprint race that weekend.
Oh, no, you can't possibly have an entertaining weekend without a sprint race.
So, Matt, would that, in your opinion, really open up doors for talented young drivers? Or is this opening up doors for drivers who have rich daddies and buy their sons a free practice?
As they like to say at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, a bit of both. Yes, you will absolutely have teams that need money selling those spots, but those spots will still be sold to people like Stroll and Latifi, who have the backers but are already in the series. They're not going to sell them off to people like me and Spanners much as we'd like.
Oh, man. It might be a little bit too late for me and a little bit out of my price range as well.
Or Mahavir Raghunathan. Remember, that's not genuine. A few weeks ago.
Not going to happen.
Oh, okay. Hey, look, I want to move on a tiny little bit. Jose in the chat says Alonso had to wait one season between driving for Minardi and getting his seat at Renault. So the urge for patience could come off then. But wasn't there more teams on the grid then? Wasn't that slightly bigger grid? Slightly. It was before the three at the back, wasn't it? But it was still a slightly bigger grid, I think.
Yeah, I think there were 22 cars on the grid, if I remember rightly. But crucially, Alonso had the test and development role at Renault this season. He wasn't racing.
But normally we'd be looking at this F2 driver lineup and we'd be going, right, okay, let's look at the future stars. But we're going to have to wait. We've heard these names before. But if you look at the top five, the two that we've been getting excited about here, Piastri and Pourchaire, was it, Chris? First and fifth, neither of them, as fancied as they are, look to stand a chance. Tictum looks to have completely, he said, I've messed up my chances of being in F1.
I think even before he said that, he was done.
Oh, okay, fair enough. And there may or may not have been a traffic occurrence. Look at Chris keeping a straight face. and then again, you've got Zhou and Schwartzman there, and it does look like, Matt, none of those guys are going to be appearing in F1, which I think that is a significant issue. If we had infinite money, you could go, okay, well, instead of your dumb sprint race on the Saturday, on the Friday, instead of your incorrect sprint race, whenever it is, have those same sports cars out. My idea was, well, have the F1 cars, but with your junior drivers. But then, isn't that what F2 is meant to be? But it's not, because we're only racing them every other race now. And I can't find anyone who is excited about the junior series this season in particular. It seems like it's had a little kind of tap on the head and it's out cold.
Yeah, well, I think part of that, as Chris notes, is that the wonky schedule makes it almost impossible to maintain and establish a narrative. We saw this with W Series. We saw it even with Formula E in the early days, where they'd have a race and then 3 months later they'd have another race and everyone would be like, oh, wait, yeah, something happened in the first race. What was it again? And you'd have to go back and read the articles to know what was going on.
I think it's not just what I said earlier about actually being, racing in front of the people you're trying to impress. It's actually being in the paddock with them. It's going off and having conversations about next season. You know, when a few years ago, most of the F1, F2 drivers who were being promoted to F1 had those deals signed by the summer. So we're now in September, nearly October, and there's still no confirmation about who's being promoted. If Joe is getting into F1 next season, it's not confirmed.
Where would he go? Where would he be going?
Sauber. Alpha. Sorry, Alpha.
Or Sauber. Yeah.
Oh, so to partner Bottas. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right, look, let's move away from the junior series and tackle some F1. Big dirty news.
Big Dirty News.
A quick reminder of our rumour policy here at Missed Apex Podcast. I ain't no one. I ain't nobody. I don't really know no one. I haven't got any links to any teams. I'm not a journalist. But we do have, you know, we do have some links to people who do know stuff. So anything you hear from me is always going to be at least secondhand. At best, seventh hand. But I tend not to tell you when my cat's neighbour cat friend's daughter's sister-in-law's brother's uncle, I tend not to do that kind of connection. But every now and then when I hear something, you go, oh, okay, that sounds plausible. You get to know the source. Sometimes it's closer than others. And I tend to be pretty honest with you guys. So we used to do the Mr. Apex understands stuff. Don't worry, there's not going to be one of those right now. But that became too stressful. I don't want scoops. I don't want scoops, honestly. I don't want to be the breaking news thing and have a... Because all that happens is everybody tells you you're a lying git and that you're making stuff up. And then when it gets revealed, people don't come back and go, oh, you were so right about that thing. Well done. Like, two people do that. So we tend not to do that. Like, so we got quite a lot of information about Aston Martin. And then we were talking about it internally amongst ourselves. And when it comes then from an independent source, from somebody else saying, oh, I've heard that thing too, that makes you go, oh, okay, well, maybe we can talk about it. So I started talking about the stuff going on at Aston Martin. I think I said in the last race review, I can't remember how deep we got, Matt, but I think I mentioned that Otmar Schaffnauer.
Yes, that's within the realm of possibilities.
Nice, close. Basically, that his job was really on the hook, and his weird praise of Stroll was like a last-ditch attempt to keep his job. And then I mentioned that the thing about his race engineer, Brad, having been moved on. And I was painting this picture of, you know, oh, he dared to cross Lance Stroll, and then he got moved along, Chris. And I don't know, there's definitely been, I can't have been the only person saying that, because there's definitely been a kind of denial of that.
I mean, do we really think it's a coincidence that Martin Whitmarsh has just been brought on board to the team with whatever role name that they gave him? I can't remember, Aston Martin Technology, yeah, no, CEO, something like that. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think he's been brought there for a very specific purpose.
And I heard that specifically. And then when I spoke to you guys, a lot of other guys had heard that from independent sources as well. So that feels like it's kind of an open secret. But I think something we didn't talk about, Matt, was why is Otmar Schaffnauer in trouble? Why is he on the brink of losing his job? And all I've heard is that he is locking heads with Lawrence Stroll, with Papa Stroll, and that there are times when he would like to say Lance is the problem in that car, or Lance has caused this issue, and that Lawrence Stroll won't have it and won't have any of it. So the picture that's being painted, not by me, is that they are losing people that dare question the establishment.
Yeah, and again, I'm going to use that word understanding, because this is thinking back to a conversation had
massive speculation, of course,
a while ago. Yeah. But if I've remembered it correctly, how about I go there? Not the only one should Otmar choose to leave. Be forced to choose to leave. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Forced to choose to leave. Invited to leave.
Out the door. He would be one of many several that might be departing for fresher environments, newer challenges. Let's just put it that way. But I do need to correct the record that his race engineer was actually kicked upwards to be senior head of trackside engineering, and he's got. Does Lance, a new race engineer, Ben Mitchell. Now, that might mean that he's done a very good job and they trust him, or that might also mean that the person formerly doing that job, again, might be headed elsewhere.
Okay, so, I was thinking of the island, where they're like, no, you know, Ewan McGregor? Was it Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson? Where they said, oh, no, he's won a lottery. He's going to go and live the rest of his life on an island. That's what Brad's doing. Don't worry about Brad. He's going to be fine. Or am I being too cynical?
No, I remember. Now I remember the movie you're talking about. And that's like, yes, he's won the lottery.
Okay. It's just it's not. I'm reporting what a lot of people are hearing and what a lot of people are saying, which is that atmosphere, to me, Chris, convinces me more than ever that that team's mission is absolutely 100% Lance Stroll world champion. I don't think that was in doubt, and I don't actually think it's implausible because he is competent. He is improving. He is competent. You're giving me a face. He is competent. Yeah. He's not going and ploughing into the back of people, is he? He's lapping.
Yeah.
Apart from his teammate, but that's staff.
I'm not disagreeing with that, because there actually was a moment in the Russian Grand Prix where I went, do you know what? Fair play, Lance. That was actually pretty impressive. Was when he sort of dived in the middle at turn two at the start.
At the start, yeah, it was a great start.
That was really impressive. Kind of ruined it by bumping into his teammate later. But
and Gasly.
The point I was going to make was that I don't think that kind of attitude is going to win you world championships. I think it's barely going to win you races.
And also, you're going to... Okay, see if this is controversial, Chris.
Okay.
He isn't a top talent, whatever Otmar says. He's not as fast as Hamilton or Verstappen. So no. If they really want to have that ambition to make him a world champion, that car has got to be like a Mercedes 2014 dominant to get him there. And you can understand from a management point of view, you want to get rid of the people who are dissenting to some extent, because that's the only way that is going to work, is if everybody is 100% on board with this message that that Lance Stroll and his teammate are who are they going to bring in? And Nigel Mansell, they're going to bring in Häkkinen out of retirement. That Lance Stroll is beating his teammate because he's brilliant and he's won the championship despite struggling with the car. That message has to be unified.
Yeah, exactly. But Mercedes and Red Bull didn't get to where they are because they put their mate in the car, you know?
I know
Christian used to run an F3000 team and he would bring up his junior drivers, you know, with that way, for example. But there's hardly the same kind of deal.
Oh my God, Matt, Rob Asher in our live chat has just said words to the effect of, if they report that Otmar's gone to live on a farm, we need to all be very, very concerned.
Yes, that is absolutely positively true. And let's face it, Whitmarsh has had years of practice saying to the world exactly what Ron Dennis wanted while he pretended to be entirely independent.
That's a reasonable point. I'm not overly knocking it, Jules, because if I was a billionaire, you can pretty much guarantee that I would buy a F1 team and put my son in the driver's seat. So I really am not knocking it.
No, but I think Aston Martin would lose a really motorsport guy if they ditch Safnauer. He's got pretty big pedigree in Formula One. He worked for BAR, worked for Jaguar, if I'm correct. And I don't know, it's always hard to judge if you can leave Drive to Survive, but I think it showed already that he and Stroll don't really gel.
Really? I have to admit, Jules, I stopped watching after like episode two because I was like, oh yeah, I get the idea.
Understandable, but if you took a really close look, you could see it wasn't all just good between them. But to be fair, it would be a shame if they'd lost a guy like that. He's played a major role in developing Force India. And like Matt says, Whitmarsh, he knows how to stay in line.
Company man.
I guess Stroll likes that.
You made me think of something really quite important, which is, you know, saying Otmar is a motorsport person. And I think what manufacturers who enter Formula One underestimate is you can't win it with a corporate mentality. It's so unbelievably different. And it is why Toyota became the most expensive failure Formula One has ever seen, because they came at it with their corporate attitude, trying to do things a corporate way and not a motorsport way. You know, when you have the CEO of Toyota standing out on the track and saying, well, the drivers aren't braking late enough. That's their fault. Well, no, I don't quite think that's it.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys, I get the feeling a lot of these guys mirror themselves to Flavio Briatore. And he came in as a Benetton salesman, right? And obviously had great success. But what he always did was making sure that he was surrounded for the technical stuff with real motorsport people. And he was just like the face of the team, you know. And I think it again, it will be a real loss. I agree with Chris. Don't underestimate it.
Chris, that's what I do on Missed Apex podcast. I don't do anything. I just surround myself with people who know stuff.
Yeah, and then take the credit for it.
Yeah.
it's funny seeing Whitmarsh back in Formula One, because I'm suddenly reminded that under his watch, and Ron Dennis's as well, I'm not going to totally lay this on Whitmarsh, but under their guys, McLaren lost their works deal entry engine with Mercedes. They lost Vodafone and they lost Lewis Hamilton, and basically brought about the Mercedes dominance that we see today. So, interesting future that lays ahead, maybe.
Last point from you, Jules.
Yeah, and don't forget Whitmarsh's era at McLaren. It wasn't all that great. And he was how do you say this?
The curator of doom.
Wasn't the exact word I was looking for, but he was being discussed, you know. And he wasn't Ron Dennis at all.
He was under pressure. Like he was under pressure, yeah. And yeah. Then like particularly like Lewis Hamilton left, and then suddenly you were looking at the results, and you go, "Oh, you're struggling a bit." To stay in the top 10. Oh, you're outside the top 10. That's obviously you'll sort that out. And then it just dropped like a lead balloon for several years after.
Well, I think where Ron Dennis needs to, you know, kind of hold his hands up as well was the feud he used to have with the president of the FIA at the time. And is also the reason why Braun ended up getting Mercedes engines. And then we ended up with a Mercedes Grand Prix.
Oh my God.
And that just unraveled from there.
Who made the decision that you weren't going to get anywhere by having Mercedes engines with Mercedes in there and then took the Honda engines? That was a Whitmarsh era decision. Dennis.
Well, so
that was Ron Dennis, was it?
Yeah. Basically, yeah. So Braun needed an engine. McLaren had the right to veto Mercedes giving them an engine. But Ron Dennis wanted an extra team on the grid so that it was an extra team in the Formula One Teams Association to argue with the FIA. Basically, because he was butting heads with them all the time. So having an extra team on the grid was good for him. He let them have a Mercedes engine. Mercedes were already not very happy with McLaren because of the whole spy scandal, the Liegate, the not very good 2009 season they ended up having, which is why they ended up, you know, purchasing Mercedes, the Braun team in the first place.
Okay. That's a lovely little tangent. I didn't expect us to go down that route at all. Obviously, that segment there might come across as a bit of a hit job on Aston Martin and their curation underneath Stroll Inc. And it feels like that to me. And as we're talking, I'm like, ooh, have we been a bit harsh? Have we been a bit harsh? Am I in danger? I don't think I'm going to get a job at Aston Martin anytime soon. But if you disagree, feedback at MissedApex.net. Tell me why I'm being harsh. Tell me what you think might be hyperbole and what might be an exaggeration. I am interested to hear from you, or you can do spanners at MissedApex.net as well.
Put it this way, we all want to see Aston Martin at the front of the grid.
Well, I want to see more teams at the front. I don't have a specific allegiance to Aston Martin.
But I think we all like the fact that Aston Martin's in Formula One, right? It's cool, right? It's not just the 007 thing. Aston Martin is cool, and you know it. And having them fighting at the front for Grand Prix victories would be amazing, regardless of whether it's with Stroll or Vettel or, you know, somebody else they bring up in the future.
I don't know. What, because they're in James Bond, Chris? That's why you're just falling for that.
I had posters of Aston Martins on my walls. It had nothing to do with James Bond.
All right. Okay, good. All right, I'll wait that feedback. Oh, by the way, you can bug Matt as well. Matt at MissedApex.net as well. You can follow everyone. Let's do that. At MattPT55. Look at him. Look at his American face there. What's your origins, Matt? What are you? You've got some Dutch heritage as well, haven't you? That's why you're long with the jaw and the face.
I don't know. I'm a mutt. What can I say?
A mongrel, much like myself. At MattPT55, you can also follow Chris at Chris on Racing. It's always worth noting that I made you change to that. You had the worst Twitter handle in the world before that, because it had an underscore in it. Have you noticed that no one has an underscore in their Twitter handles anymore? I was on the right side of history. You were wrong.
It was 2011. What was I going to put in there?
I don't know. Not an underscore. It's basically evil. At Chris on Racing. And Jules is on the Twitter as well. At Jules Sagers, double E.
Double Correct.
E? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Do you have F1 at the end? At Jules Sagers F1.
No.
Oh, no. No F1 on the end. But all the links to everybody's social media is always included in the show notes now, whether you're on the ad-free Patreon RSS feed, patreon.com/missedapex, whether you're watching it on YouTube or whether you've got the regular feed from our Acast feed. So please do go and follow all the crew. What I'd like to do now, Matt, is move closer to our League of Justice, but for the cars, because we did this for the Ferrari a couple of years ago. I want to do this for the Mercedes car. I don't want anyone to be confused. The League of Justice is not for Lewis Hamilton. It's not for Max Verstappen. It's not for the team. It's for the physical mechanical car. That's whose side we're taking. But I think to get there, we've got to do a little bit of a pickup. And the things we missed, I think, from the Sochi Grand Prix. I know there's a tiny bit of Lando Norris news in there, but I really don't want to kind of drill deep into that anguish again.
And fair enough. We did an excellent job, if I do say so myself, of getting that from all three or four dimensions, depending upon whose physics you like best. But one thing that we did not settle, and we in fact had a big argument about, was whether or not the power unit penalty taken by Mercedes was solely to mess with Red Bull,
mm-hmm.
or whether it might actually offer a vital clue to very real reliability problems Mercedes is concerned about. And the fact of the matter is, we've seen an article, and indeed, there are some reliability concerns. The engine he ran in Monza had some problems. They don't know if they can use it again. And since they already messed up the qualifying anyway, they said, let's just put some more bits into the pool so we can use them if we need them.
So I am now following Valtteri Bottas on Instagram. I wish he had more of a sense of humor out loud. I don't know who runs his account, but he posted, the meme of him looking at the Verstappen-Hamilton crash and kind of going, He posted that, but with the background was a massive pile of engines, and it was like, just Valtteri and all his engines, which is hilarious, to be fair. But Chris, I hear this explanation. I still sort of don't believe it. It still feels like spin to me.
I would believe it, because why would Mercedes want to damage their image by saying, oh yeah, our reliability is so bad, our engine did one race?
No. This is just a sporting thing. They can do that when they're leading by a billion points, but now they're in a real scrap.
They're not. This is a terrible thing for people to think about Mercedes. And if they don't win the world championship, that's what they'll point to. Because Lewis will have to take an engine penalty at some point. And if Max wins and Lewis doesn't come second in that race, that is a net points loss.
Hang on a minute. If Lewis Hamilton complains about his engine at any point, it's fine. It's exactly like tyres. Wow. That's what they're doing. They're like, these power units, they're not going to last, And then it will do all of the 2022 season as well. Oh no, my engine's gone. He's sorted.
That depends. How was he? If he sounded like he did in, Sepang 2016, then maybe every Lewis Hamilton fan just winced.
Too soon. That was pure anguish.
And we have seen a few Mercedes power units having some issues over the season, more so than usual. And I do wonder, because Bottas did have the new power unit at Monza, and boy, he did so very, very well there, much better than Hamilton could do against the McLarens. And then he comes here and they have quote-unquote reliability concerns. They give him new bits and suddenly he's just like to the Bottas we remember from seasons past. There goes Max. I can't really pass anyone in traffic. Oh, let's put on some inters and finish fifth. I know they said he was struggling with understeer, but I really do wonder if they had turned that engine up some in Monza and they've discovered a problem now. And so everybody's maybe running with a little bit less power. This might explain why Hamilton, for example, couldn't get around Ricciardo.
Okay, so a couple of things there. You can take a risk with Bottas. Remember the rumors that allegedly Mercedes turned up or cranked up the power for George Russell's engine to see how the engine would behave and basically see what future upgrades they should introduce for power unit changes. Secondly, Bottas doesn't matter in this title fight necessarily, so you can take a risk with him. So if you want to say, right, this weekend, crank it up, and if it blows up, it blows up, then so be it. So I will start to come round to your point of view. I've been a little bit convinced by Lucas in our chat room. Lucas, one of our finest, actually, iRacing participants. Listen out for round one of season five coming up soon with Chris and Catman on commentary, broadcast by Uncle Steve as well. And that's going to be great fun. And Lucas says Mercedes strategists are smart enough to know that Bottas isn't good enough to defend against Max. So all this talk pre-race of like, oh yeah, this is to mess up his race. Perhaps, Jules, Lucas is right there. Perhaps the Mercedes analysts wouldn't do that because they probably figured out that that wouldn't work.
No, I don't buy it for 1 minute. It's a very popular reading of what happened here in Holland, of course.
Yes, of course.
Mercedes puts Bottas on the back of the grid just to disturb Max Verstappen, but it just doesn't work that way, that you can, you know, just throw out some power unit elements and put some new ones in. You have to really argue that you need to replace these. And
it's less interesting, Jules. It's a less interesting narrative. Come on, man.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, but, you know, if they'd really want to do that, if they'd really want to get in Max Verstappen's way, they should have just left him where Bottas started, because in that position, he could have done a lot more to disturb him.
Oh, I hate admitting. I hate being wrong about stuff. But I think, yeah, Matt, your read on that pre-race, I can't remember whether you said it on the podcast or not, but your read on that was correct. Probably starting from seventh would have been overall more useful than putting him at the back of the pack. Chris?
So, I'm maybe it's different for engines, but, you know, I remember Ferrari very happily opening up Felipe Massa's gearbox back in 2012 in Austin to put Fernando Alonso on the correct side of the grid. You know, these are not it's not an unusual tactic.
I don't think I got this point across well enough on the podcast, which is that was to move him out of Alonso's way. That's one thing. To actively put a driver back as the number two to mess with the contender of the number one, that's a different league. If they had done that, if that it was the motivation, that would be much worse than that Interlagos one.
Would Mercedes be so willing to just sacrifice Bottas if, say, Sergio Perez hadn't scored the same number of points as George Russell in the last five Grand Prix?
Well, that hurts. I mean, it's true, but
it is true. But Mercedes have only led 18 laps in the last eight Grand Prix. That's appalling. Max has led over 200 in that time.
That's a good stat. Let's just explore that for a second, because that's such a good stat. I just want to explore that. Someone tweeted it. I'm sorry, I can't credit. It went viral. But basically, the stat, Matt, is that Verstappen or Red Bull have led 280 laps. Mercedes have led like exactly the amount of laps they've won. The picture it's painting is that Mercedes have basically won every race on the last lap.
Well, this is interesting. And happily enough, I did go look it up for you with Philip Burton on Twitter. And it's 208 laps, 65 for Ocon, 56 for Ricciardo, Leclerc 50, Norris 31, Sainz 12, Hamilton 11, Bottas 8.
Whoa, that bears repeating. Hamilton's led how many laps?
11.
This is only for the last eight Grand Prix
races. Oh, right, okay, I was going to say
so
that.
In that time, they've only won two Grand Prix?
Two Grand Prix now, yeah.
Yeah.
And so naturally this made me interested and said, well, I wonder what the whole season looks like then. So you'll be happy to know that over the whole season, Max Verstappen has led 469 laps versus Lewis Hamilton's 133.
Ooh, wow. That's quite remarkable.
And if we look at the constructors, Red Bull as a team has led 503 laps to Mercedes 160.
So you have to unpack that and go, what the hell is going on there?
Well, there is a consequence of races like Bahrain, like Barcelona, for example, where Max led the majority of the race. Silverstone, Leclerc led the majority of that, but Lewis ultimately ended up winning very late in the day. And that's really all that matters, the points that come at the end. But it does speak of an indicative lack of performance relative to what we are used to seeing with Mercedes, especially in the last few Grand Prix, because of races like Hungary, where they were out of the running because of the rain. Spa didn't happen.
Wait.
Monza.
We've got a full list of this. You've led us really nicely into what I wanted to end the show on, which is our League of Justice for the Mercedes car. And you're absolutely right. We're not used to seeing this kind of struggle from Mercedes. And there's a general creeping feeling that Mercedes are dropping the ball. That sounds harsh, but no?
No, I wouldn't call it dropping the ball.
Okay.
I would call it a regulation change that massively interfered with their car more than any others, combined with a team that is so desperate to win this year's world title. Yeah. They are sacrificing everything out. If you think Red Bull is going to be at the front of the grid next season, like, I mean, good luck putting money on that, because I don't think anyone thinks they're going to be at the front with the amount of resource they're putting into this world championship.
And because it suits my narrative, I can also say that they are heavily throwing everything at one driver. Poor Perez. He would definitely have won loads of races without that. But I think that is true to an extent. They are definitely... anything that comes out will go on Verstappen's car first. So you're right. They are facing that. However, Mercedes do have the raw pace. They do have the raw equipment. They have the one of the best drivers in F1 history. So why aren't they winning by lots more? And Matt, I know you and I will argue about this, but I am convinced Mercedes have had the best car for about 6 or 7 races.
Yeah, I understand that. And before we get into the nitty-gritty, is it where I just wish to take issue, because to my knowledge, the teams get the exact same rules at the exact same time to design for the next year.
Mm.
And I honestly think that if you want to talk about dropping the ball, that's where it starts. I think Mercedes did not predict the issues they'd have with their design, but I don't think you can lay it all on Mercedes. I also think no one predicted Honda would show up with the power unit they put together between November and the start of testing. Because, oh my, that was a huge and I think very unexpected step forward. That was a whole year early.
I would also argue that Mercedes has, and to use Spanish phrase, dropped the ball in particular. I think they have been too conservative, especially in races. Now, you can argue there were races like Barcelona where there was that really bold strategy, but I think Sochi was a pure example of them playing it too cautiously in qualifying, for example.
They've always done it, Chris. They've always done it. Since the hybrid era, they've had such an advantage that they have had a wait-and-see method and they've been able to respond and had the capacity to do things. But a team like Red Bull can roll the dice. And when you've got McLaren behind you as well that can afford to take alternate strategies and get in front and ruin your race, the do-nothing, and I don't mean that as a lazy or anything, but the wait-and-see approach isn't working this season. So you're right. I don't think they are being proactive, but they've never been. They haven't been since they came back.
I'm going to disagree with that ever so slightly, because I seem to recall Mercedes basically inventing strategies. Like, let's take Hungary 2019 as an example, where they box Lewis when he arrives at the back of Max Verstappen. He has to make up that entire gap and pass him before the end of the race.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying they never do anything proactive, but in general, they've been reactive is all I'm saying.
But I think there are other ones as well where they have been like really inventive with the strategy. And this year, it's not arriving for some reason.
I feel like I need to clarify that when I say do nothing or reactive, that doesn't mean not good. That means that their general approach is to be reactive. Of course, they have done inventive strategic things. They are filled with very intelligent, race savvy people. All I'm saying is that they have deliberately let themselves be on the back foot on occasion. But here, that tactic might not work when it's a little bit closer.
Well, they can't make up the ground as easily.
Sure.
You know, for example, it's all well and good. They have a strategy that puts them back into third place. It's a lot harder for them to get back to the front now.
So I want to hand over to Jules here, because you have done quite a lot of groundwork here. What I want to do, and I'm going to reiterate this, this is not a how could Lewis Hamilton be beating Verstappen, poor Lewis Hamilton, everything's gone against him. This is not that.
the actual car, the car itself could have had more points. And we're talking about human error. So driver or team, Jules, you've done quite a bit of work here, just compiling a list of the season, and it's longer than you'd think.
Yeah. Well, if you look at human errors, let for instance, with Hamilton, I think everybody feels like he seems a bit more error prone than he has been in recent years.
I agree.
And then you try to summon up some of his mistakes up, and it's hard to think of that many. So I took a dig in this year's races, and for instance, in Imola, he loses his P1 from pole. Verstappen takes over. He goes off later in a rush to overtake Russell, I think. Damages front wing, spends a minute in the gravel. And Monaco was a very, very expensive race for Mercedes. They didn't get the tires working. Hamilton qualified finished seventh,
of course,
over
yes.
a minute. Yeah, and he finished over a minute behind Verstappen. And I think the two most costly races for Mercedes have been Baku, when they had a slow stop. Mercedes revels in slow stops for some reason. Then they called him in, had to wait to let him go because Gasly was passing him. That meant Verstappen took P1, and then after the puncture Verstappen had, obviously Lewis had that brake mode on, which he shouldn't have had, and a P1 or P2 was lost. And I think the worst example was in Monza, when he not only had a bad start in a sprint race, messing up his starting position for the Grand Prix, but they had a slow stop again. And if they wouldn't have had that, he would have come back on track more in front of Verstappen. The crash would not have happened. But they compromised their own race. They had a slow stop. Everybody knows what happened. And instead of maximizing there, they had a no score.
And a car on his head. Yeah.
He had a car on his head.
And then, of course, recently with Russia, they end up, Matt, with... you know, with a very, very messy qualifying. And you have to say that's probably, you know, a strategic call. Before it makes it sound like we're just pointing out all of Lewis Hamilton's errors, the list for the team errors is probably arguably longer.
It is even longer. And as Matt just pointed out, it seems like Mercedes underestimated how much effort Red Bull, but especially Honda, would put in there in their final year. And
do you mind if I bother you to just say, can we quickly rattle off your list of the times that we think that Mercedes dropped the ball on strategy?
Definitely. I think France was a very costly race for Mercedes because they let Verstappen undercut Hamilton, and it allowed Verstappen to actually do a two-stop and pass Bottas and Hamilton. And I think the most painful example was in Hungary, when obviously everybody after the formation lap went in for slicks, and Hamilton was the only one out there. And instead of, you know, Verstappen was out of the race due to Bottas.
Let's let Chris just come in there quickly.
Well, can I just, I know it sounds like we're, you know, really bashing on Mercedes, but, and this is for people who I know are already typing in the comments.
Welcome.
I reckon the Red Bull list for this as well, and for Verstappen, would be equally
as long.
And I would like to hear a list from Jules on the same topic.
Okay, well, look, we've got to Hungary. I know there's three more. Let's go through those, and then we'll get your opinion. I know we haven't compiled it, but I don't agree with Chris. I don't think it's been as much from Red Bull, but we got as far as Hungary.
So, for instance, Belgium, wet qualifying, they didn't get the timing right. Maybe like Russia last weekend, which led to him being P3. Race doesn't happen. He's P3. Well, everybody knows Lewis Hamilton at Spa in a Mercedes. You know, he'd been quickest over free practice, I believe, or at least during that quali. So he should have gotten pole. Dutch Grand Prix couldn't handle a Red Bull speed. They messed up the undercut. by sending him out on the tires that Hamilton didn't want.
Oh, he wasn't happy.
And then not only that, but they send him straight back on the track into traffic. So it, you know, I knew people would because you can't do this right? So I knew people would say like, oh, you're bashing on Hamilton. Oh, you're pointing out Merck and we can indeed compose this list for RBR. But I had a look and we really can't. In fact, if it wasn't for Silverstone and if it wasn't for Hungary, the world championship would have looked a lot worse even for Hamilton. So even without those, you know, RBR are on spot this year. And Max Verstappen has been a lot more mature than even I thought.
Oh, look at that. Look at that Dutch bias, Chris. Weigh in with some some British bias. Say how Max Verstappen and Red Bull are terrible.
I was going to say it's even worse than that because Max had a puncture with three laps to go while leading in Baku.
In Baku, yeah.
You may argue
I tell you what, this used to happen in the early years of Hamilton's career as well. When he was having engine failures in 2012, people would go, well, he's an engine wrecker. That's what he is. He's an engine wrecker. It's the way he drives. It ruins
the engine.
It's
how he drives the car. Yeah, yep, I remember that.
It's because of his personality. It's because somehow his personality blows up the engines. So I'm going to do that, Chris. Verstappen's a tyre wrecker. Perez didn't have his tyres blow up, did he? Did he? Oh, Verstappen too hard. But no, honestly, I was surprised that you think the Red Bull list is longer. I really don't think it is. I think Red Bull have been hitting their marks.
Do you know what? Some context to backtrack on my earlier comments.
Okay.
Because
I love
this. Already walking it back. That's not a good sign.
I don't know about the Red Bull one, but the thing that kind of springs to mind about Max immediately, first race, passing Lewis off the track and losing the win effectively.
That would be on there.
That would certainly be on there. Portimao, which was just a bit of a mess, really. You know, the should have been on pole and then mistake that let Hamilton through. The problem is from then on, he's been pretty imperious, except for the two controversial collisions with Hamilton.
Oh, the driving side, you're right. The driving side, very hard to say. When was a weekend where Verstappen phoned it in? Where was a weekend where he just didn't turn up? And historically, well, if you look back at Hamilton's career, we can point to whole seasons where he phoned it in, didn't turn up, still won a couple of races. I don't think Verstappen has phoned in a single weekend, but there have been mistakes. And oh, here we go. Here we go with the comments. Yeah. I do class Silverstone as a mistake. Even if you think it was mostly Lewis Hamilton's fault, as the driver coach point of view, no, don't force Hamilton to the inside, guaranteeing that he is going to not take the ideal line and then squeeze and then hope he's going to take the apex because he was never going to. You can say that's Hamilton's fault, but Verstappen, both those drivers consented. Why am I doing this again? Both drivers consented to that crash, hoping the other one would duck out. So that's an error. And failing to get out of the way of Bottas, do you know what I mean? There was 15 cars behind that didn't get hit by Bottas. Only 5 cars got taken out by Bottas in Hungary.
Okay, that one's a stretch.
Okay.
But I like that one. No, you're right. He has been very good on the days when it hasn't like quite been going his way, and most of his drives have been pretty imperious to the front of the field.
Yeah,
you know, Baku, Monaco, Austria springs to mind. Well, Sochi was kind of a good example of I need to bag as many points as possible, damage limitation. And it's really put the pressure on Lewis when Mercedes inevitably put a fourth engine in his car. Because I always say it, championships this tight, very rarely, I think, are won on the days you were perfect. It's won on the days that things go awfully wrong and you limit the damage.
It's like golf. I don't know if you play golf, Jules, but it is like golf. On the bad holes, minimize the damage. When you put it into the trees, don't sit there trying to go through this mystical gap that Tiger Woods would have done. Just punt it back onto the fairway, reset, go get your bogey.
Yeah. Actually, I do play golf, okay. But so I get the reference. But Chris is absolutely right. I think championships like this, your worst races decide. If you manage your worst races in a proper way, that's how you win titles. And Monza and Sochi were the feared races by Red Bull because they thought Merck would do damage there. And if, well, there was damage at Monza, but points wise,
yeah,
they walk away from those two races laughing, and the tracks left, although this season doesn't really allow us to say, oh, this is a Merck track or this is an RBR track because it's so messed up this year. But still, I think RBR have come out as the psychological victor.
It's interesting you mentioned the remaining races because we don't know what all of them are going to be. Of course, we're expecting Qatar to fill in this TBA slot. Who knows who's going to be quick there? You know, Turkey, God knows what's going to happen there, especially if the surface is still messed up like it was last season.
random ice rink.
Yeah, I mean, you would say Austin and Abu Dhabi, they're pretty murky tracks, but then we also have Sao Paulo and Mexico, which in recent years have been very Red Bull tracks, and then I've got new race in Jeddah. No idea what's going to happen there. I'm loving it. We have no idea how this is going to end, and it's still so close.
Jules, here's how I feel about the balance between the two teams. I think the drivers, they're relatively equal. I think you've got a slightly cooler head with Lewis. I think you've probably got a slightly more consistent. I don't think I'd have called that at the beginning of the season. A slightly more consistent drive with Max Verstappen. But Hamilton's experience is very valuable in this situation. I think Mercedes have got the car advantage. I stick by that. I think they've got the car advantage, but I think Red Bull are hitting their marks. And like you'd said, they're capitalizing on what should be bad days, whereas I'm not sure Mercedes are. That's my take, Jules.
I think I agree. And going back to Chris, I think for the coming races, the races left, who's going to win it, Verstappen or Hamilton, isn't going to be decided who's the faster one. I think it's going to be decided who loses the most points to interfering teams like McLaren.
Yeah, McLaren or
Ferrari. Ferrari had a great update for Leclerc this weekend. It's going to be on Sainz's car as well. And McLaren and Ferrari are in a really tight battle for third spot. So if those guys are going to interfere like they did in Monza, like they did in Sochi, you could really lose points to those teams. And, you know, it's
Matt.
Yeah, well, I feel like I want to agree with that 100%. We have Lewis Hamilton trying to nurse a power unit to the end of the season.
Mm.
And one of the biggest advantages we've seen Mercedes have is on certain tracks with longer straights, they seem to have regained their energy deployment, probably due to an FIA technical directive that came out yet again. But they've regained this advantage they had. And he may not be able to employ it to its full effect if they were trying to avoid the penalty. And this is why I think we've seen him stuck behind McLarens, stuck behind Ferraris for longer and longer. And that's nothing but trouble if you have a bad start and they get in between you and the person ahead.
Well, I think they need to just bite the bullet and take the other engine. He's either going to be so slow down straight so he gets mugged or can't overtake anyone, or worst case scenario, goes bang in a race and he loses 25 points to Verstappen. But you mentioned technical directives, and a spark went off in my head, because something we haven't even considered at one point is how pit stops are suddenly playing such a crucial role, because we're seeing so many mistakes in pit stops.
Oh my God, tell me you didn't listen to the Russia race review without telling me you didn't listen to the Russia race review.
Well, you?
My goodness, in detail, Matt, we spelled it all out.
I'm saying you didn't mention it tonight. Anyway.
But I'm more. Right.
I'm very busy.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things I just want to make sure we pick up before we go. And props, by the way, Jules. I think that was a fantastic list. Research. It flies in the face of everything we stand for here at Mist Apex Podcast. But I would like to see that list in an Excel spreadsheet, and we could perhaps assign a points value. What do you think? Could we assign a points value to the 44 car for all of those incidents and see where we're at? Could we do that?
In an Excel sheet.
All right. Cool. Or Google Sheets.
I get a bit of the never mind.
That will be forthcoming, Chris. I want to make sure that we right or wrong. Barely talked about signs in the last race review. I've got a bit of a blind spot when it comes to signs, and I know Matt gets upset with it as well. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Is it the reporting? Is it the coverage? He consistently gets good results. I expected him. In fact, Matt's going to need to weigh in first then, Chris. You've been arguing with me for this for, I don't know, 5 years?
Yeah. Easily.
I expected Leclerc to go and smash Sainz because I thought that Leclerc would have the team advantage for sure. But when it's a cool head that's needed, it does seem to be Sainz. There's something. There's a professionalism. There's a solid base of Sainz, which isn't perhaps as exciting or as dynamic as Leclerc, but he is getting the job done. Why aren't we more excited about Sainz? Why am I wrong?
I think you nail head. If you look at his race, last race, aside from a little battle at the beginning with Russell before he got the advantage and taking the lead from Norris for about 7 laps, his race was completely unremarkable. It was almost perfect, but almost entirely devoid of drama. And really, I think only the bad pit stops from Ricciardo and Perez sort of kept him in the ball game late enough to switch to the inners and take the podium. And so I think that's why people didn't really talk about it very much. The car wasn't capable of finishing on the podium. It was other teams' dramatic mistakes that left him in that. But being who he is, it was 100% all the way there. And he deserves more than he's getting. But I think his style, and again, just the lack of drama with finishing where he finishes a lot of time, is why he does not get more coverage.
I am going to disagree with you slightly, because I do believe Ferrari should have been in podium contention in the dry. The bare minimum third, I would have expected Norris, Hamilton, Sainz. The reason he ended up not being there was because Ferrari called him in so early to cover off Stroll.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of people went, nah, I'm good. I'm going to keep going for a little bit. And that's what really cost them. And it was really only the good call to go to Inters that saved him.
But even that wouldn't have protected him from Perez, I don't believe, if Red Bull had gotten that stop right.
Maybe I'd have to rewatch it, but I still think they should have been in contention in the dry. There's no doubt before Inters were going on, he was further down the order than he should have been because of that strategy.
Yeah, I would agree with you. The strategy call was completely bonkers, but Perez was right behind, was not far off Hamilton when Hamilton pitted.
Okay, so I think this is something that we will look out for in the future. Let's make sure that we're not discriminating against Sainz because he is kind of meticulously going about his business in an unremarkable yet perfect way, as Matt says.
Well, we should be keeping an eye on both Ferraris. That battle between McLaren and Ferrari for third in the Constructors' Championship is pretty brilliant. I'm loving it. And do you know what? I know McLaren had a 1-2 2 weeks ago, but it's still like super tight. So, and do you know what? Ferrari being on the podium in that race rather than McLaren, it's just swings and roundabouts. Loving it.
Okay, right. I don't like to berate my panel, but I hate this phrase swings and roundabouts.
Why?
Because swings and roundabouts are very different, yet it is often used to say these two things are very similar. But swings go backwards and forwards and roundabouts go round and round. So I just... It winds me up. And that is the kind of thing that you can hear us talking about on our Doom Scrolling podcast. And this week, we have a very special guest. His name is Christopher Stevens. He is going to come and join us on Doom Scrolling podcast on Thursday, where basically me, Matt and Chris will talk about the things that have kept us hooked onto our phones, that annoy us, that upset us. We'll have a good old whinge. Come and join us there. The link will be in the show notes below. Matt, I think we are approaching the end of the show. I think so. It's been fun. I've enjoyed it. I like these Tuesday pickups, by the way, after a race. I'm not committing to doing them all the time, but it's been quite nice.
Yeah, well, there's just so much that we don't get to talk about in our only podcast on Sunday.
And the lazy podcast that can't be bothered to do anything until Tuesday, they get all the good information and all the good analysis post-race, whereas we're just guessing and making stuff up on Sunday. That's not a good advert for our Sunday stream, is it?
No, but people will turn up anyway. They just like to hear us rant.
Thank you so much for the support that we've had. I know that a lot of you are aware of the sort of influx of YouTube-y type comments and emails that can be a kind of negative. That's not just us. That has been industry-wide. It's increasing in all content creation, but particularly in F1 this season. We are 100% focused on the people that want to disagree with us in a polite and civil way, and we're more than happy with that. We are not against people criticizing us. Please criticize us, not my sound or my microphone or my moustache. Jeez, no, don't do that. But criticize our opinions. That's fine. We love debate. We love people coming at us with fresh opinions. That's how we learn. But the second it's an insult, my cup is full. So the second it's an insult, the second you say that panelist shouldn't be on your show, the second you say Chris has a ridiculously long haircut that is inappropriate for his age and that he should go for more of like a 90s French crop, the second you say that, I'm more inclined to block you. So come debate with us. Please do. We love your interaction. But what I wanted to say is a massive thank you to the huge amount of encouraging emails, tweets, and messages that we've had, and we would not be here without your support. Please also follow our panel. Chris, who I just mentioned, with his slightly too long hair and quick.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Chris on Racing. Go and follow him. At Jules Segers, S-E-E-G-E-R-S.
Yep,
and
correct.
Matt at MattPT55. But I know what you're all thinking. At Spanners Ready, I'm the best one. Come and follow me at Missed Apex F1 as well. All the links to everything we've talked about is in the show notes below. We will be back on Thursday. We're going to catch up with Joe Saywood. I think we're going to take Sunday off. So you'll have these two shows, but no show on Sunday. And then I think we're back for the Turkish Grand Prix. Although, to be honest, I'm so confused with this calendar. I think it's October 10th will be the Turkish Grand Prix. But wherever we see you next, work hard. Be kind and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. No, Matt, I haven't forgotten anything. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. I've forgotten nothing. Shut up, man.
I didn't say anything.
No,
that
I can
not
see you.
Me.
Oh, I didn't say anything with my mouth. Therefore, the message you're sending with your eyes. It's somehow irrelevant. I've not forgotten this for ages. Come on then. Who's our candidates for?
Comment of the week.
Just so that we can stop any accusations of bias, I'm going to let our token Dutch panelist be the judge of the winner. Jules, are you ready to decide? All right.
Yep.
Okay, let's good. Have it. Okay, Matt, give us your candidates and Jules will decide who the winner is.
All right. The first one is a bit of an empathy candidate. Our friend Stuart Neal with back of the grid battles are all I know about when karting.
That's true. He's not very good at karting, but he can't get a sympathy vote just because he doesn't know when to turn left and right and do the pedals. That's four inputs. It's not that hard.
AJ in Louisville thinks the problem with F2 is branding and suggests they rename it F Million, and that should probably solve it.
Oh my God, because higher numbers are more attractive. A genius, AJ. Well done.
Sam Labine, Brad, went to a farm upstate.
Don't that's too sad. He's running around with all the other race engineers. He's having a fantastic time.
Rob Asher, going back to Bottas having a hidden sense of humor. You'd want one after 5 years of being Lewis' teammate.
Savage, but Kovalainen agrees.
And last we have Daz the Gardener talking about powertrains, saying Red Bull would be literally walking this season if they still had a Renault engine. Literally walking.
Oh, like that, like a Flintstones car with their feet exactly. Pedaling under. Jules, who's our winner?
Although I like the Flintstones reference, I'm going for AJ. I really like.
I agree.
Yeah,
Matt, what was the AJ one?
That F2 should rebrand as F Million.
Higher numbers are better.
Comment of the week.
You know, it used to be called F3000.
That would have been. That's an even. Is that a bigger number? No.
Well, not than like
a million.
A million.
No, it's
no.
True. Yeah.
But it was called 3000, if I remember rightly, because of 3000cc engines. And it was back in the day. It was not a spec series. This was from 84 to 04.
Or the other thing is to call it like A1, like A1 GP. A1. That's like the highest. That is the highest letter because it's first and the first number. So you can go that way. Or you can go Z a jillion and then. That's the other extreme.
Quintillion.
Yeah. What's the highest number?
Well, there isn't one.
Infinity.
They go on forever, mate.
Yeah, they've not named them all. There's clearly a highest named.
You can.
No, there's a highest named order of magnitude, though, surely. Like a Google is very high. Like, how far have we bothered naming orders of magnitude?
F log 3000.
Guys, we're out of here. Bye.